O'Carroll, the World War II Army Chaplain.
Professor Williams and President Humphreys, distinguished guests at the head table, before I invoke the presence of Almighty God to our gathering, I've asked permission if I might make just a brief statement. And this statement is one of protest that we have what I call a segregated part of the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the opening of the Alaskan-Canadian Highway. It was my privilege to be at that gathering at Pikehorse when the event took place. I want to protest it because I think it is not necessary to recognize the achievement of Afro-American soldiers. This should be an opportunity for the United States of America, through its Corps of Engineers, to apologize for the lack of publicity to the more than 34% who constituted the building of the road. That was more than just a highway, but a demonstration of the possibility to build a road of access to the Simpson oil wells, which was very, very important to the Allied forces. I volunteered to be a chaplain to young men who were from colleges, high schools, from the old established military forces, to help them to keep their perspectives concerning the defense of freedom. I wanted to help black soldiers to overcome the stigma that they were simply labor forces geared only to do pick and shovel work. I wanted the people to know these folks are capable mentally to cope with the technology of the turnover machine earth movers, how to run them, how to prepare them. So necessary because Russia and the Allied forces had come together to defend freedom against Hitler and the forces of Japan. And I feel that this should be a celebration of Thanksgiving and apology for overlooking these truths. I, along with many of us who traveled considerably with considerable expense to get here, our honored veterans, feel that it is more than just an opportunity to greet each other and say hello, although it has been a joy for me to do that, to see some of the persons with whom I soldiered on the Alcan Highway, not only in the 95th, but in the other outfit. So I feel that we must protest this, and I hope I don't offend you in that respect or detract from the celebration. May we now bow our heads in prayer. Lead on, O King Eternal. We follow not with fears, for gladness breaks like morning, where'er thy face appears. Thy cross is lifted o'er us. We journey in its light. The crown awaits the conquest. Lead on, O God of might. God, the creator of the universe, and of us all. We thank you for life, for courage, and for future insight. Be with us as we celebrate a great physical achievement. Take from us any bitterness, but increase our capacity for love, that those who despitefully use us by neglect and indifference may grow into your presence, and that we in turn may permeate this gathering with a blessing for the living, those living and dead, who gave of themselves in the defense of your creation. We thank you for those who made this possible. Lyle Morgan, the facility of FAMU, the ingenious work James Eaton and his committee. And we would ask that you would bless this food in which we will share, keeping us in mind of those who do not have food to eat. We pray, O God, that we will become strong in body, mind, and spirit to continue to do your will. Through Jesus Christ, our Lord, we pray. Let us all say amen.
Amen.
I was telling my aunt last evening about this program that I'm to preside over on the Leicester Highway. She said, well, I make some of that salad myself. And she said, incidentally, are you people planning to defend yourself against Georgia down in Florida? Well, that's as much as we know about the program, of course. At this time, we'll have greetings in the following order: Dr. Frederick Humphreys, President of Florida University, Professor James Anento Eaton, Dr. Lyle Morgan, Professor of Journalism, University of Alaska Fairbanks, the Florida delegation, Alaska delegation. So proceed in that order, please.
I'd like to say good afternoon to all of you and to welcome you to Florida A&M University. I'm particularly delighted that we have Representative Davis here with us from Alaska. I'm particularly grateful that we have Regent Cecil King here with us and that we brought back one of our outstanding sons to address you today, Colonel Joe. And all of the members of this distinguished group, we are very delighted that you are here. I am particularly pleased that we are playing a role in honoring those men who were part of the Corps of Engineers who helped construct that 1,500 miles highway from British Columbia to Fairbanks. I had the occasion to go to Alaska. I'll tell you about that. I had to perform a duty for the Department of Education. They asked me to go to Sheldon Jackson Community College in Sitka, Alaska. I had never been to Alaska. And my notion about Alaska was that it was extremely cold, which I don't think is wrong. But I thought of Alaska like they refer to the United States as the lower 48. And I thought it was very much like the lower 48. So when I agreed to go do this evaluation of the program at Sheldon Jackson Community College, which is a Presbyterian two-year institution in Sitka, I told my secretary to book me in Anchorage and rent me a car. And I was going to drive down to Sitka when I got to Anchorage. So she proceeded to do that. She put me through Anchorage and reserved me a car at the airport there to drive from Anchorage down to Sitka. And when I called the person at the school to tell them what my plans were, he said, "I strongly suggested you that you don't do that. Rather, you go to Seattle and you take the Alaskan Airways and fly to Sitka." And after much conversation and much reluctance, because you see, I saw myself as hurriedly getting to Alaska, driving that car down to Sitka, doing what I got to do, and then go drive back to Anchorage and come home. Well, anyway, I took his advice and I flew to Sitka. And then I understood the wisdom of that once I got there. I also thought it was extremely cold, so I asked him how much overcoats I should have brought with me to there. And he reminded me, he says, "What's your temperature down there?" And I was at Tennessee State then. And I said, "Oh, it's about 45 degrees. He said, "The same temperature here. So whatever you're wearing there, you can wear up here at Sitka." I said, "Okay." And I got there and I found there's a current that comes off the Pacific Ocean there. And that is kind of warm down there on the Asian side of Alaska. So my first introduction to Alaska, which everybody goes by airplanes up there. Still not too much highways up in Alaska. That even makes the feat of the Corps of Engineers and those black members of the Corps of Engineers, the soldiers who did the job of building that highway, even more important today after you've done it. So we're very proud to be a part of honoring you, the work that you've done, and the great feat that you did 50 years ago, helping to extend the influence of America and to make possible opening up that region of the country to all of the great exploration and the great promise that it holds for making a quality nation. And so on behalf of all of us who work at Florida A&M University, I am very pleased to welcome you to the university, to congratulate you on the feat that you were a part of accomplishing, and tell you today how proud we are of the good work that you've done. And thank you for deciding to come to FAMU and help give us the opportunity to be a part of honoring you. I'll greet you. Please know that you're welcome. And Eton's in charge, and I know it's going to be a good job done. Thank you very much.
I don't need a mic because you're not from that loud tribe, you know. Most of you who are here, I talked to you this morning already. You've already been to Eton now. We had a nice number with the archives, and I preached my sermon this morning. But on behalf of the Department of History and of the Black Archives, and most of all, the Princes of Black Archives, I want to welcome you to Florida A&M University. This is a unique group. We had a good time last night, a good time this morning. We had a good time later on this morning. We have a good time tonight. It's just a pleasure to bring together the black troops of the who helped to construct the Alaskan Highway, and of course some of the white commanders and other people and other friends here today to recognize a feat that's been missing in history. My job as archivist curator is to find the history and to put it in its proper perspective. Now, a lady called me 3 years ago on the telephone and said, "This is Fairbanks, Alaska." I said, "Fairbanks who?" She said, "Fairbanks, Alaska. This is Dr. Leo Morgan. I'm going to speak to Dr. Eton." I said, "This is Professor Eton." And she said that I went to Washington, D.C., and I went somewhere else trying to find somebody who would help support this program. And they told me that you were the greatest authority in African American history in the world. Of course, that blew my mind. So I got in a little old bag, started traveling around in search of the missing vet. And then all the major newspapers had this story, and we through Alabama, Louisiana, and Richmond, Virginia, what have you. And she traveled a northern route. And we located more than 75 living individuals. Now, believe it or not, see, this is 50 years ago. These men were already about 20. A little bit over 20, and they were African Americans who don't normally live a long life under adverse conditions. We were able to find close to 75 different individuals, and we contacted them, and they called me back and forth and all over. And finally, today we got about 15 here, and our family, probably about 20 other friends here, to help celebrate this wonderful achievement, considered to be the greatest engineering feat since the building of the Panama Canal. I want to also give special thanks to my great supporters and friends. They are called the Friends of the Black Archives Research Center and Museum. But when I go out and do all these kind of wild things, you come to the rescue when I come to them and say I need some help. So welcome to university. Thanks to the Friends of the Black Archives, and thanks to all the veterans who are here, and thanks to the members of the panel. I sent a letter to Colin Powell and asked him to come to speak. I didn't realize that this was the anniversary of the first year of the Gulf War. And I imagine he's running around the country now with president making all kinds of speeches. So he wrote me back and he said that he couldn't make it. So I responded to him and said, well, General Power, don't worry about it. I don't have any problems. I got a good friend. His name is Colonel Ronald Joe down there at Diomi. So I just will call him, and he will be able to replace you magnificently. So that letter's gone off already, and I'm just glad to be able to have a good friend. I can call on the last minute and say, come to my rescue. Thank you very much.
Found out there was a part of Alaskan history that had been overlooked, and a very fascinating part. I thought it should be put back in the record. And when I asked around, they said James Eaton and his friends of the Black Archives are the very best people to do it. I want to thank you for doing a marvelous job of finding veterans and for hosting this event. It is the beginning, not the culmination of a long search. We are going to have a museum exhibit of historical photos and a collection of photos of this reunion, and it will be traveling in Alaska, and then it will come to Florida. If anybody wants it in your home state, if you're not close to these places, we'll see that it gets there too. We're going to keep on collecting material. We hope one of these days there'll be a documentary, and that the people who built the Alaskan Highway will not be forgotten. It's a great highway as an Alaskan. I can say we really couldn't do without it, and we thank you very much. I will be in touch with you, most of you. If you want information as we go along, please don't hesitate to write me. Some of you, I know, are planning to come north. You noticed that there were no Black events on the Alaska Alcan schedule for celebration, but I am happy to tell you that this is blessed by the Alcan Committee, and that, ironically, the first Alcan event is here in Tallahassee, Florida, which is a little bit strange, but here we are. I'd like to say to Walter Mason of the 97th A Company, could not be here today. He was a commander, and he gave Alaska more than the Alcan Highway. He gave his son, he teaches with me. He just wanted to be remembered, and he would like to just say a word in memory of Steve Williams, Ben Marshall, and George Green of A Company 97th, who would also like to be with us in our own spirit. It's been a wonderful meeting you all, and I thank you. It's going to have a good time.
Is there a response from the Alaska delegation?
I'm from the Alaska delegation. I was waiting on Florida.
Greetings to all of you, and it's my pleasure to be here this afternoon. I traveled a long ways to get here. I got here yesterday after morning about 9 o'clock after I have traveled all day and spending the night in Atlanta and then moving on to here. I've had an opportunity to meet many of the men that worked on the Alaska Highway. It's been a pleasure. And it's my honor to bring greetings to all of you from the great state of Alaska, from the governor, who indeed endorsed that I do come down and be with you today, and I'm glad that I accepted his invitation to come here. Governor Hickel also was instrumental in having one of our bright young students to come down, and she has with her an escort, and her name is Jamil Haywood. I would like just for her to stand and also for her escort to stand. We are all from Anchorage, Alaska. And I'm glad to know that we have a professor who was instrumental in contacting Professor Eaton and trying to get this celebration together. I hope this is just the beginning of many celebrations that will take place. It's so nice to know that Black people do have a history in the state of Alaska. Now, I knew about the Alcan Highway. I wasn't aware that there were that many Black soldiers and young men that worked on that highway. Now, as I look at it, they say there were more than 10,000 people there. So I assume that about 3,600 or so of those people turn out to be African American people. And you can bet that it will get back in the record in Alaska, because as soon as I get back, I'm going to file a citation, and I hope that I would also be able to pass a joint resolution giving recognition to all of you that are here and those that are still alive and to the families of those people that we can realize. You can bet that that will happen. You that I will do everything in my power to make sure that the many of you that want to come to Alaska and be a part of the celebration, that I'll do what I can to see if we can come up with some finances to help assist you, since you were so gracious in paying your way to Florida. And it was a hardship on some of you, so I know that you can't come to Alaska. And I'll do everything that I can to help come up with finances so that you may come and be a part of this great celebration. For over 300 years, strong men, strong Black men, have contributed mightily to the building and the preservation and shaping of the United States of America. And it's just so great to know that you had your part in Black America, in Alaska. These Black men that we've talked about over the years have built roads and constructed homes and done many great things throughout the state. We understand that whatever we do, we didn't do it alone, and that there have always been white people that were so gracious to come along. They were humanitarian and humanistic and wanted to do the right thing. There's always been somebody around that wanted to do the right thing. And many of the commanders that worked with you praised you highly and said that you were capable of doing more than digging ditches, that you could handle heavy equipment, and you proved that you did that. And you build that road, and you did it in a record-breaking time. And you did it under adverse conditions. But that's nothing new to Black America or to African Americans or whatever you might want to call us. We've been called Negroes, and we've been called colored, Black, Afro-American, African-American. We accept it all. And because you have come from a group of people that have outstood many things, going to Alaska to build a highway, I'm sure, was not some of the greatest adversities that you have faced. But what you did it well. And as I was talking to many of you around, and I said, well, you lived in Quonset huts, and they told me, no, we didn't. We lived in tents that might have been surrounded by wood, but we lived in tents. While others lived in Quonset huts and well-insulated buildings, the Black soldiers did not have that. But the one thing you did have, they tell me they gave you equal pay for equal work for what you were doing, and that was great. And many of you were able to take that money that you made while you were there to come back and go to school and become professionals in other areas, and you've done many great things. And we are very proud of you. We want you to know that. And even though this might be just a small celebration, it is a great celebration. And I'm so glad that Professor Eaton had all of those records and was able to go and contact the many of you and have you to be here. And I hope that I will be able to be at a greeting to greet you in Alaska so that many of you can come and see what it is like there in Anchorage and Fairbanks and some of the other areas. When you were building those 1,500 miles of road, you probably didn't realize what great things you really was done, but you did great things. And you were able to do it, as I said, because you come from a people that have outlived and endured slavery, and you have outlasted the lynchings, and you have outfought injustice, and you have outrun racism, and you have outfought bigotry. And so no wonder you could build that road. I keep wanting to say railroad, but I mean the Alaskan Highway. The Alaskan Highway is great to us. Many people drive it all the time. They cross it into Canada and over into Alaska. I haven't had the opportunity to do that, and I didn't really have a desire to do it, but I do now. Every time I fly in and out, I think that's the best way to do, but I hope very soon that my husband and I will be able to drive up the Alaskan Highway so that I can see some of the work that you've done. I want you to know that there's been many improvements on the road. It's no longer gravel. It is now paved all the way through. And so you wouldn't recognize the highway that you built, but had you not been there first, we would not have that road, and we would just be able to come by ferry and to fly in, and many people would not be able to afford to come to Alaska, because now you can drive to the state, great state of Alaska. It takes a few days to do it, but it's worth it. And finally, I want to say to all of you that you should be of good cheer, and may God continue to smile on you and your families. And I wish you Godspeed along the way. And I hope that this is just the beginning of the many, many celebrations that will take place in 1992, honoring all of the people that build the Alaska Highway, but giving particular emphasis to the 3,600 and some men that were African American descent. You are great, and God bless you, and I love you.
Our response came from a legislator in the great sovereign state of Alaska. Let's give her a big hand, please. Before we hear Colonel Ronald M. Joe, who has a beautiful message for us, we're going to have lunch. And we'll ask that the head table here will move it in. I think probably the best way to do this is to have the next table move in others. We'll move around.
Very much. I'd ask to get up and start talking to you while you're still eating, so that we could get on with this. And so I ask that you continue to eat, and go ahead and clank the forks and do all the things you need to, and don't worry about it. I know you'll listen anyway. When Dr. Eaton decided to have this, or when I found out he was having it, I was very interested in coming up because I'm a Fam Ewan, and because I have a great deal of admiration for him. And I found out the date for this and got it on my calendar, and I head back home I guess tonight or tomorrow, and we do a speech tomorrow, and then we get on the airplane and go away for a week. But I wanted to be here. So Dr. Eaton sent me the word. He said, come up and just be prepared to say hello. Just be prepared to stand up and say hello when you get here. And so I did that. And when I got here yesterday, Dr. Eaton, I'm going to tell on you. When I got here yesterday and I walked into the hotel lobby, I was really happy to see him. Actually, I'm still glad to see him. He said, you're here and you're my man. And he showed me the program, and my name was there. And he said, Colin Powell couldn't make it, and you're it. I'm honored to be a stand-in for a great American, a military man like John Powell. And when I see him, as I occasionally do, I'll let him know that I stood in for him. And quite frankly, being a FAMUan, I feel like I've got one up on. I'd say a few things about myself, and I will really make it brief. And I would say that, first of all, I am extremely proud to say that I'm a FAMUan, and that I got this military start right here, both in terms of an education and in terms of ROTC. I am presently the Commandant of the Omi, and I think it's only important that I say to you what that is, because that is the institute where we train all of the equal opportunity advisors for all of the Department of Defense and for the Department of Transportation, all services, and that's for all military. And shortly, we will begin doing that, hopefully, for all civilians in the Department of Defense. And so I would like to join in by saying that if someone had given me a two-question quiz yesterday or a week ago and said, you got two questions. The first question is, tell me something about the Alcan Highway and the number of black soldiers that were on it and what their accomplishments were. I would have had to respond by saying, let's try the second question. And now I will ensure that what we think is the greatest library in America, and we're pretty certain of that, on equal opportunity matters, and research about people who have achieved, I will add to that literature about your accomplishments. I've already bought a book from Dr. Eaton that I'll get back and that I will get in my library so that you can get it included. I think that this piece of history, lost, strayed, or stolen, it is so significant that Dr. Eaton has brought you together here today so that more people can understand what your great accomplishments were and that we can have another generation of Americans understand what your great accomplishments were. Dr. Humphreys, Dr. Eaton, the Honorable Mr. King, Professor Williams, Dr. Lyle Morgan, Ms. Betty Davis, Representative from Alaska, other honored guests, and ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure for me to be here today and have an opportunity to experience these outstanding gentlemen and to say a word to them. I was asked to say a few words about the history of blacks in the military. I'm going to attempt to do that. I quote, I do not ask that thou shalt not front the fray and drive the warring foemen from my sight. I only ask, O Lord, by night, by day, strength for the fight. That's a poem that's called The Warrior's Poem. It was written in 1906 by the black poet Paul Lunch Dunbar, who identified racism as a critical battle where victory would bring full citizenship. The battle against racism wasn't just fought in our nation's capital. It was fought just as often on foreign lands and domestic soil, on the sea and in the sky, during wartime by men such as you, by women now such as you, and those who went before you. Calvin Coolidge said, the nation which forgets its defenders will be itself forgotten. I'm not sure that he had the vision of black Americans when he said that. It does not, nonetheless, diminish it. To the extent that we include in that dream and that vision all Americans who have helped defend this nation, the extent that we will be remembered as a nation. Your reunion reminds us that we must not forget many of the contributions that black members of the armed forces have made in defense of our nation. When we think of black Americans succeeding in the U.S. military, the most obvious example is General Colin Powell, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. doing an interview with him, aired on 60 Minutes last Sunday. He said that Americans saw and heard the ultimate armed forces equal opportunity story. General Powell said that he could not have reached the heights that he did in the military without major inroads in equal opportunity that have been made by others before him. You, members of the Black Engineer Corps, are some of those others. And I'm honored to have this opportunity to talk to you about it. You have many outstanding accomplishments, none of which my teachers prepared me for or told me about, and none of which were in the history books that I was exposed to this point in time, and none of which are in the archives of the military history books and all of the military schools that I've gone to. And as I've said to you, I will do what I can to write that in the near future as well. From the Revolutionary War to the present, the track record of Black people in the military is an impressive list of one achievement after another. Success stories, like the heroism of those in the Army and Navy during the War of 1812, with Blacks playing a critical role in saving New Orleans from the British in 1815. Later during the Civil War, about 200,000 men, 12% of the Union Army, was Black. They had a higher killed in action ratio than white units. That means percentage-wise, more Blacks were lost than white. Yet they had a lower desertion rate. Few of them left. They stuck to duty. And that is example of what a tremendous asset this nation had in Black or Afro-Americans to use in our armed forces, an example which they did not pick up, and therefore, with trepidation, committed you to the Alcan Highway, hoping that you would succeed, but not sure. Following that example, they should have known. After the Civil War, there was the Black Cavalry, and there was the Black Infantry in the American West. More than a quarter of the Black Cavalry was Black. And these Buffalo Soldiers, as they were called, earned 19 medals of honor between 1869 and 1890. Their Black infantry counterparts were among the first soldiers to fight in the Spanish-American War, earning 5 medals of honor. In World War I, there was the U.S. Army's 93rd Division, who overcame incredible prejudice before fighting valiantly in French trenches on the Western Front, their performance belying, but sadly not defeating, the racism that surrounded them. You, members of the 93rd, 94th, 95th, 97th, and 388th Infantry Correction Engineer Regiments also set that kind of example. In spite of being ill-fed, in spite of being ill-clothed, in spite of the kinds of living conditions that you had the courage to persevere and overcome. You put aside your personal desires, somehow knowing that your service, your success, would result in a better chance for other Black Americans. There were individual Black American heroes in World War II. Dory Miller is an example. He was a cook aboard the USS Arizona. On December 7, 1941, he braved strafing enemy airplanes to save his wounded ship captain. He is credited with shooting down 4 Zeros, and he was eventually awarded the Navy Cross by Admiral Chester Nimitz, who was the chief of staff of the Navy. And it wasn't easy. We had to fight as a nation to get him recognized and to get him to receive that award. Then came the Tuskegee Airmen. The Tuskegee Airmen were America's first Black combat aviators, 1,000 Afro-American pilots. They were trained in Tuskegee. They shot down more than 100 enemy aircraft in air-to-air combat in the Mediterranean and the European theaters, doing 200 missions, and I think you should listen. This is important. doing 200 missions of escorting bombers over Europe while flying to some of Germany's most well-defended targets. 10,000 individual sorties, the Tuskegee Airmen didn't lose a single bomber to an enemy fighter. No other unit in our military history can claim that. And it was because of the Tuskegee Airmen that the Air Force became integrated. And it is because of your tremendous efforts. It is because of your tremendous efforts that we later saw the Army become integrated. It was interesting late last night to read the February 1943 edition of National Geographic magazine, and to see what happened there. The book by Miss Lyle Williams, and see what happened there. As a result of your accomplishments on the Alcan Highway, we finally got a highway much needed for the war effort. Now, it's cold outside today. It was cold yesterday. I've spent 13.5 years in Germany, my wife and I. I'm a tanker, I'm armor. And that means many days, for 30 days at a time or 40 days at a time, I've been out in the cold and thinking, gee, how cold this is. Can I handle it? I handle it. But I had a Jeep, and the Jeep had heat in it, and occasionally I could resort to it. And thanks to you, I was a leader, I was an officer, I was the boss, I was in charge, I was in command, and I could do what I needed to do as well as take care of my troops. But history says that you braved minus 79 degrees temperature. It is inconceivable. I am not ready to imagine that. And you did it for as much as for 8 months and 12 days, and that over the long run, that it was 40 degrees below zero in the wintertime. Now, I'm not trying to gross you out or be graphic, but let me tell you, just in Germany, there are things in your life that stop when it gets that cold. There are things in your life that stops before it gets that cold. I can tell you, and I can remember it, and I will always remember it, my first tour in Germany. And it was real cold, and I needed to go to the bathroom. And ladies and gentlemen, when you gotta drop your pants at 30 degrees or below, and I see you all shaking your head, and go to the bathroom, you begin to make some decisions. You say, well, it can wait. Now, think about 79 degrees below zero. Living in a tent, not in the Quonset huts. The Quonset huts were for the majority, so. And let's think about not a bathroom where there's running water and you can flush it when you're finished. Let's think about slit tents, and we used to use lime. And you begin to make decisions. And these courageous gentlemen, who our government wasn't sure could make it, not only made it, that's just a small example, withstood that one. Let's don't talk about taking a bath and how you get water and how do you move around, keeping your feet. You gotta understand that it's tremendous. And my hat's off to you that you had the courage to do that, to persevere and move on, because you made a difference for us, for our nation. And it was also in spite of a guy whose name was General Buckner, Jr., whose dad was a Confederate general, and whose dad had surrendered at Appomattox to General Grant, and who carried some of those ideas with him into the Alaskan theater. And in addition to the environment, also made it difficult for you based on his attitude. And again, I've been a boss, and I have bosses, and I have head bosses. And how the boss feels about you, and how the boss treats you, makes a big difference in your life, and particularly in the military. Because the military is not a democracy. We serve a democratic society. But if the boss says, everybody jumps 6 inches high tomorrow morning at 8, in the military at 8, we all try to jump 6 inches high. And the boss makes a difference. And you put up with that, and you kept going so that you could be where you are today, and that I could be standing where I am here today as a result of your efforts. There were 3,000 plus of you amongst 10,000. And you poured the road some 1,500 miles long. And I thank you for it. And because of your efforts, and the efforts of other great black American soldiers. When we started the Korean War, the armed forces began to integrate its units. The Navy and the Marine Corps followed. And today, the U.S. military is the most integrated element of our society. And I think you should take some special pleasure out of that, because you helped make a difference. I'm here to tell you that I firmly believe that there is no other segment of our society which says that based on your hard work and your intelligence and your dedication to duty, you can rise as high as you want to go. And Colin Powell is there at that end, and I'm here at the lower end, and it says that if you care and you want to do it, you can get there. And you are no small part of that. And then I don't think we can forget that there are many white Americans who also cared and who also helped make a difference and who helped you make it through in the Alcan experience, because many of them didn't have to treat you as well as they did. The environment was certainly there with General Buckner to have been totally different. Mr. Walter Dudrow, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, who's here with you today, whom I borrowed the National Geographic from and was able to do some reading on it last night. Mr. Neil Grossman, where are you? There. His father was a captain involved in the Alcan experience. And Miss Bernice Rand, are you here? Miss Bernice Rand is the wife of Captain Gossman. And they've come here today because they care. And it's important that we not forget that there are also majorities that have cared and that have helped you and us experience the advances that we have in our nation and the armed forces. We in the military have to understand that our job is a human readiness job. We don't have the option of doing equal opportunity because it's fun to do or because it's right to do. We do it because it's human readiness, and we can't do any differently. Now, finally, when I found out that I was the person to stand here and talk to you today and that Colin Powell wasn't, I said to myself, now, there are a lot of people in this audience who are a lot smarter than I, whose achievements I could